But Mr. Johnson, I gave the lady at Western Union Carlton gave me directions to call the head office. I did call, and they gave me email to
send it to
I'm very disappointed.
Yeah, I agree. And ma'am, you've taken the right decisions, and I hope they understand it. I'm not saying that they should necessarily you know, skin the person out on their ears, but what they should do is institute directives to all their people that this is how you handle these types of arrangements, so you don't have a, you know, this repeated, and don't take people's ID cards and try to deface them. Don't do this, don't do that. Give them some instructions so it doesn't happen again. I, you know, hopefully it will work that way. Yep. Thank you very much, ma'am. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Good morning, sir.
My name is Caswell Franklin.
I got the voice. Good morning to you, sir.
Oh, thank you. I woke up this morning for telephone calls, five, to be exact, from people who have come to the end of their layoff period. You know, it's 22 weeks. You remember, some months ago, a government went to Parliament and changed the time that you can claim severance from 13 weeks to 22 weeks.
Right.
They didn't only do that. What they also did was to say that you must claim that severance within 4 weeks. Under normal circumstances, you have a year to claim your severance pay. This new amendment for these people who went home during COVID, they will now only have 4 weeks. And everybody that I spoke to this morning, of those five people, they did not know that. That is why I am calling you. Because if five out of five that I spoke to this morning did not know that they only have 4 weeks after the 22 weeks, they will not get severance at all. They will not be entitled to anything if they go after the weeks. And I'm seeing at least one of the employers has told them, okay, we can lay you off another 4 weeks, you know? So that poor person didn't know that during that 4 weeks that you're laid off, but after that 22 weeks gone, your 4 weeks starts going. And if you miss the 4 weeks, you get nothing. If you have 30 years at that workplace or not, you'll get not a cent. Mr. Johnson, I am hoping that enough people hear what I'm saying now and count down and make sure that they claim their severance pay. I do not know why government would have reduced the period of claiming your severance from 1 year to 4 weeks. I think it's unconscionable. But why I say so? Because they didn't let nobody know. They put it in the legislation, but most people don't know what's in legislation. The legislation was passed within 1 day in Parliament, and nobody knew what was going on.
I want to pick you up on that, please, if I may, Senator Franklin.
Please.
And it's this. Very often, I hear what you've just said repeated about several pieces of legislation, whether it's Traffic Act, whether it's amendments to the Traffic Act, whether it's regulations attached to the Traffic Act, whether it's registration of business, whatever it is, a wide gamut of legislative amendments, changes, whatever. And you hear it's in the legislation, but nobody read it. Sometimes lay people or lawyers in some cases would send a note, and I've received some here on Down to Brass Tacks by various ways, saying, read this piece of legislation, Dennis. Article 8.1 contradicts Article 5.2. Right? Now, when these things happen, my question to you is, what next happens? That's the only way I could put it. Because if you've pointed out something that, as you say, nobody's read, it's in there, it was passed and nobody noticed. If it is then picked up, what happens next?
Well, what happens, you know, they say ignorance of the law
is not an excuse. Yeah, for breaking the law. But I know,
Once it's published in the Official Gazette, everybody in Barbados is deemed to know what it says. So if you put some in the Official Gazette last week, and you were out of the island, you come in today. By the time you come in the airport, you know what it says. That's basically what the law implies. But what government should not be seen to be doing is, and they call it sneaking legislation in on people. And that's what has been happening from the time I set foot in the Senate. Normally, legislation should be circulated in the country. In the form, if you ever get the Official Gazette, you will see it. A little document that says objects and reasons. Mm-hmm. That's the bill. The bill should be circulated, laid in the Parliament. And when it is laid in Parliament, then that is the signal for it to be published in the Official Gazette and circulated in the country so people will see what government intends to pass on your behalf. But by the time it is published in the Official Gazette to tell what the government is intending to do for you, it is already passed. And that is the problem. So most people do not know. I've actually seen where they put amendments for one piece of legislation into another piece of legislation. So you didn't even know, like, for instance, the Employment Rights Act. That was amended in the Holidays with Pay Act. So most people do not know that there were amendments. And subsequently now, even the legislators, like, they forgot that there were amendments, and they have brought these amendments now again. You see, I do not know why they do these things. They
ask because, as you've just pointed out, either A, people don't get enough time to read thoroughly, prepare, perhaps even ask an opinion of pieces of legislation. Two, from where I'm sitting and listening to you, there seem to be no mechanism for adjournments of those amendments because of numbers or whatever, although there have been occasions where things have been amended in the Senate and sent back to the lower house for them to deal with it. And three, it seems that there are people who, from what you're saying, believe that weight of numbers and a belief in the party you represent is all it needs to get a piece of legislation through the House and made law, whether it's properly drafted, whether it makes sense, whether Article 5.1 and 8.3 are in conflict, and then you wait until, you know, somebody gets charged under the Act, and it comes up that there's an anomaly, and then you go and do an amendment, and then an amendment to the amendment, and we seem happy with our system, sir. If you have a situation where you have a representative, well, I think you have more than one now because you are a trade union leader in your own right, where there's more than one person in the Senate now representing labor, where you have persons in the Senate who are lawyers and those who have legal training, if there are amendments that come to you that are either A, rushed, B, badly drafted, or C, seemingly in conflict, there must be something you could do to make sure that it don't just get rushed through, as you say, in the still of night or with nobody checking or nobody knowing. Something wrong with the system if that ain't happening, sir?
Senator Tate, she complains bitterly. Very often she says, I am a lawyer. I cannot sit down and support something like this. But what happens? They pass it anyway because she's only one vote against. I've done it on occasion. I'm only one vote against. They have the numbers. And because they have the numbers, they're like, you know, sometimes they know they're wrong. But they cannot be seen to be allowing people like me and Senator Tate to tell them that they're wrong, so they let pass. And then they come back weeks later and amend it, even though they knew it was wrong when they were passing it. You know, this kind of foolish games do not make sense. You know? Then there's one other thing that I want to mention, and I saw it here while I was talking to you. A new fire station coming near Bridgetown to provide emergency service. You know, when they were proposing to pull down that fire station, I got up in the Senate and I said, a fire station should always be in Bridgetown, because if you have it outside of Bridgetown and you have a fire event coming down and the schools are letting out, the people up the road waiting to get the church, not the road, going to be blocked, and when the fire truck gets there, the place going to be burned down. And, of course, they wanted to destroy that fire station, so they did. And now the error of their ways has come to them. You know, when I spoke about it, even the chief fire officer got up and in the newspaper to contradict me. So why now, if I was wrong, why are they putting one back in Bridgetown? Yeah? I just asked the question. I don't expect you to answer it.
You know. Listen, because apparently they get funding through the port to build it. I don't know. Look, it was an interesting development. I saw it. I read it. There are several interesting things about the development of the port that I'm again paying attention to, because I will wait to see if it triggers the type of income that we need from our ports of entry, or if this is part of the privatization of the ports of entry. You know, you have the development of the airport on one end, and then you have the development of the seaport that I'm sure will follow, whether that is all a part of that type of development. I want to ask you this question, though, before you go, because I saw another thing involving you in the newspaper, and you said it took you by surprise, and that's the developments at the NUPW. Have you had a chance to have a chat with the officer on that particular move?
No, I haven't spoken to her so far.
Okay.
I'm still researching, because, you know, I do not know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that I will have to research and get back on.
Right.
And this is one of them. Like I told the newspaper, it is virgin territory for me.
Right.
And, you know, when you're going into virgin territory, you got to be careful. Maybe my butt up and snitch.
I like the way you put that. Let me ask you this question, though. Seriously, in situations like this, where you have, and I made the comment, I think it was on Tuesday, about the fact that at one point we had C2SAB, an umbrella body for trade unions and staff associations, and the BWU broke away and they still haven't, merged. Does it undermine the quality of representation, worker representation, when we have these seemingly conflicting issues at the head of our unions?
The problem, sir, is that the unions have been doing their best to destroy themselves. So these conflicting issues is just...
Politically? Political affiliations overriding worker concerns, sir?
I am glad you asked that,
I'm always glad to hear some information. Yeah.
The last administration was hounded by the unions and the private sector. They even got together and marched against them. Now, mind you, I didn't march with them because I saw something coming. They joined with the then opposition to pull down the last administration. I don't think that is a dispute in anybody's mind right now. But they did it on behalf of a political party. That political party is now in power. So that political party that is now in power knows the power of the unions, that the unions can get together with people and take them down. So what this political party is doing is making so they will not get the chance to take me down. When, if I ever behave like the last administration, the unions will be too weak, too neutered to do anything. And I think, well, that is my view. And it appears so. So the unions need to...
But, Senator Franklin, I know Michelle is signaling me for a break, but I want to ask you this question. I've said to one of the previous callers, the gentleman who drives the taxi who spoke to me earlier on today, I've said this to him on more than one occasion when he's talked about unions in bed with government. My learning and experience of history of the Caribbean throughout the years, and I say the Caribbean, is that unions have always been at the forefront of political development.
Yes.
From Jagan in Guyana, Pandey in Trinidad, and we come up the line, Gary in Grenada, Ebenezer, Joshua in St. Vincent, all the way up to the Birds in Antigua and Jamaica Workers Union, under the various people, Bustamante and Manley. What has changed so dramatically from those days of the 50s, where you had people who understood that fighting for workers' rights and beginning to attain political power meant that you're still in the vanguard? That's why these parties had labor in their names. What has changed so dramatically that now we're saying unions are used, neutered, sidelined, what other terms you use, rather than saying you know, they are now partner with government to improve the lots of workers. When did unions become, I don't know, the enemy of labor parties, and big business became the good friend of? Because something has gone dramatically wrong with what started in the 40s and 50s, or even the 30s. And I know you have researched your history, so you must know.
In a word, Dennis, mm-hmm. integrity.
That's a big word.
Those people in the past, they believed they were working for a cause. And that cause was to better the workers' lot. The people we see nowadays who come into the unions, they're coming not to better the workers' lot. The only worker the lot that they're trying to better is theirs. And that is the problem. We don't have that type of commitment anymore. Most people do not know that Grantley Adams died a poor man fighting for workers. He could have made a hell of a lot of money as an attorney at law because he was a good one, I understand. But no, he was there fighting for workers. But no, we don't have that type of people. Those people anymore, except for people, me.
I was going to ask you what happened to Franklin. No, but Caswell, I think it is unfortunate, sir, that we have seemingly gone full circle where we do not believe anymore that our labor leaders are fighting the cause of workers. I think the collective bargaining process has been undermined by, intransigence in some cases and just disappointment in other cases.
I'll tell you something.
And because of that, workers in Barbados are complaining about being exploited.
Dennis, since I've been representing workers in the private sector, and when someone wants this in public service too, I have been offered jobs, collect things at factories, I have been offered hotel rooms, all kind of stuff. So I do not know if that is some of the inducements that also turned them away, because I have been offered these things. Mind you, when I tell them, well, my wife don't like hotels, so I won't have nobody to bring.
They're providing you with a wife, right? They might provide you with a wife if you say so.
I think I'll keep.
Look, it is unfortunate, though, and I think more than ever, today, in the environment we are in, the representation of all the classes, including the workers, vital, because you have organizations looking out for business, you have organizations looking out for the interests of their grouping, and I think our union leaders should also be in the vanguard of looking out for those that they represent, because that is the lifeblood. Our workers are the lifeblood of this country. And if they're not there, there'll be nobody to purchase from the businesses. The businesses will fall apart. There'll be no commercial activity. There'll be no income for the island. And we can be further down the pipe. We can't do without it, sir. But I thank you for taking the time out and bringing the things you've brought to our attention. Now we could perhaps work on fixing it. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Let me just advise you that Voice of Barbados will bring live coverage of Jamaican election results tonight from 8:30 from RGR, Radio Jamaica. So the Bajan Jamaicans who want to follow and don't want to do so online, we'll be bringing it to you on Voice of Barbados. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Dennis.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine. I mean, it's a difficult act to follow when you're coming after one of my favorite senators.
Then the pitch should be easy for runs. You just, just keep putting the ball in the places where he did. Unless they put a fielder there.
Because there was, I wanted to speak on a particular subject and I was wondering in which over to bring it, but it seemed I have to bring it to the first over. I was quite happy to hear the minister of that most wonderful place have been able to get back his wings in order to speak on the going-ons at the Bridgetown Port. It was quite refreshing to hear him speak. Probably the first time in months that he would have spoken pertaining to anything going on in the Bridgetown Port. And what the thing about the fire service that is now going to be placed in there. But I know that there's an incinerator down there that works, and I was wondering why they're going to put a fire service.
As I said to Senator Franklin, it could have to do with the modernization of the port for privatization, because ports of entry.
One down and one to go.
Well, ports of entry. If you have fire station at the airport and that's a point of entry, perhaps the international requirements are that your ports of entry have, you know, firefighting equipment. Let me put it that way. Whether it's tugboats in case a boat on fire, or whether it's a fire station on it, maybe that's part of the international regulations. I plan to look it up. When I saw the comment, it crossed my mind that it may be part of the modernization and privatization process.
After hearing about the changes that would have been coming around at the Grand Adams International, I always got the impression, based on that one, that it was being something in the pipeline going towards the second port of entry.
Mm-hmm.
But
time
is longer than twine, and time will tell.
There's always.
The next bit, Dennis, last year I thought it was a good idea that, as an independent country, that you're given your national honor, the honors. And the honors in which Ambassador Carter would have been given is equivalent, if my understanding is correct, as the Sir. So you had a choice there. You can either you take the one that Ambassador Carter took, or being Sir like Emil,
right.
So Emil Straker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my concern in there, Dennis, is that with Sir, the Sir wife becomes a lady. With the equivalent of the other award, what happens to an individual? Because his wife, if that person has a wife, what the wife would be called?
Lady.
Would be called lady.
Damn, I don't know. I have to check that one. That's a good question. I don't know. I don't think she'd be called the wife of the most honorable. They're just too long.
See, because
it's interesting.
No offense in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Is it that dames are only given to persons who are not married?
No, actually, dames are the equivalent of sir for a lady, so she doesn't have to be married or not. If you're married to a sir, your name goes before it. So, in other words, you won't be called. For example, the Governor General won't be Dame Sandra Mason. She'll be Sandra. The first name will go. For example, she'd be Lady, you know, Lord and Lady kind of thing, Sir and Lady.
Right.
So, for example, Sir Harold St. John's wife is Stella Lady St. John.
St. John.
Right.
So, what happens to the dames? What happens to
Dame husband?
He's out in the cold, Dennis.
No, he's not out in the cold, man. He got things too. I can research the protocol and let you know, sir. I like digging up and reading them things. But here's the thing, though, right? And this is my one. This is just my back of the handball, right? If we're moving away from the monarchy, why are we bothering with it? You know, the sad truth is that we always take one step forward and then we stagger two backwards. I saw the former Prime Minister of Antigua, Baldwin Spencer, saying he don't want no knighthood. Point blank. You want no knighthood, no honor, forget about that, right? But there are very few who do. You know, they take it and then, you know, we jump all over the place trying to figure out whether to take it or not take it. But,
But Dennis, at the end of the day, the majority of the things that we achieve at this end in the Caribbean still come up from these colonial systems.
But I know, and here's what's funny, eh? Paul McCartney is Sir Paul McCartney. Ringo Starr is Sir Richard Starkey. He preferred to go back to his original name. But when the Beatles, as a unit, were given the OBE or the MB or whatever, they rejected it. It didn't come from the same queen.
Yeah.
So now that they're old, they can take the sir.
but
they rejected the OBE when they were, you know, the Beatles and Riding High. We don't want no OBE. We don't want no MB.
When we are going to change laws or do certain things legally, we still hang on to the same coattail the British legal system. Mm-hmm. Now, switching out to home, I think that I almost said something that would not have been right to say. Now, anything in a bad way that Senator Franklin would have alluded to, and that's what part of my topic, but mm-hmm. mine's on a different vein.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing that a senator in addressing the Hotel Association stated that it will take something like $300 million to pay persons in severance, right? And I think money seemed to be fairly slim at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that during the time, if such money has to be paid out, depending on the amount of years that certain people, because some people might have in a good few years, is it possible that some of this money might be coming in bonds and some in cash?
Sir, I have no idea. What I know for sure is that what this says to me, this entire episode, is that we have been lax, and the government of Barbados, has been lax in ensuring that employers are up to date with their contributions to the various funds. They've also been very lax, unfortunately, in giving people chances and making them, wishing them well and avoiding their obligations to the government. And now that we find ourselves in putter, we have to scramble to find money.
You said putter or potter?
Potter. I said it the way I said it on purpose.
Yeah.
Because they're on the greens playing golf. That's what I was punning on. Yes.
Right. That is
they make these decisions on the golf greens, sir. And now that we are in butter.
Yeah, but that is my last one. Really.
We got to find it from somewhere. So we have to make sure. No, serious. On a serious note. Eh? Uh-huh. We have to make sure that when times are good
mm-hmm.
or people live up to their obligations. They pay the NIS, they pay their taxes, they live up to their obligations.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, when we find ourselves in these times of hardship, the funds are there once they've not been squandered on nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But now, talking about severance payment pressure, Sunday paper, bonds at risk, Monday paper, bonds at no risk. You can't take it out of your left pocket and put it in your right pocket and say you got money, okay? It don't work that way.
My last thing is, and this has always been my thinking,
mm-hmm.
and if I'm wrong, you can help me to be on the right track. The big boast in our beautiful little country is about our foreign reserves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dennis, I am sure that your wallet that is in your back pocket, when you open it, you can say, quite frankly, every cent in here is mine. I have not borrowed this from anybody. I don't have to pay about anybody. But all of this money that we are boasting about, minus $220 U.S. million, is borrowed money that has to be repaid. It is not yours. Anytime you have something, you don't have to pay back anybody anything. But this big boast all the time about this, how the reserves stand. They stand like that because it's borrowed money. But I'm not...
It gives us the opportunity to continue to face the headwinds and to try to ride out the storm and to hope that it will be used to be the launching pad for income that will pay it back when it comes due. Or else... we'll have to say the Lord's Prayer, forgive us our debt as we forgive our debtors.
We're really in real stormy waters.
So we are. And unfortunately, that has not resonated with a wide cross-section of the public for a variety of reasons, some political and some not political. Let me say this, something I've said before. I don't like repeating myself by will. Yesterday as well, I heard discussions on this program about supermarkets, okay? I may be wrong, But I've often said that our supermarkets are not designed for us. Our supermarkets are designed for hospitality industry. That's what they're designed for.
Yeah.
Because Barbadians do not use 7 different types of toilet paper. They do not use 5 different types of ketchup, 6 different types of cereal, and Peter was yesterday on cheese, so on 5 different types of cheese.
Yeah.
Yes, we have choice, but I don't think our choice is that wide, okay?
Yeah.
But Americans believe that ketchup is Heinz. So if they don't see Heinz, it's not ketchup. So you're going to have Heinz. Right? Now, when you go to the supermarket in Barbados, whether you went last week, last month, last year, or whether you went yesterday, the shelves are stocked. So, whether you buy or you didn't buy, whether you could afford or you couldn't afford, the supermarket shelves were stocked. So as far as you're concerned, everything is all right.
All right.
All the exotic wines are there. Absolute Vodka is there. Grey Goose Vodka is there. You know, XO, XA, XY, they're there. Okay? You don't drink, but they're there. If Barbadians went to the supermarket and there was no toilet paper on the shelf, there were no canned juices on the shelf, there was no meat in the freezer, there was no potatoes or onions or, you know, the supermarket shelves were bare, the reaction would be different.
Very little vegetables.
The reaction would be different. People would ask, what's happening here? Now, if you go into a supermarket today, if you go into the one on the West Coast or you go into the one on the South Coast, the lines are not as long or they're not as bustling as the ones in town, like Jordan's across there. Because those on the West Coast and the South Coast used to be filled with visitors sometimes, whether it's, you know, foreign visitors or Caribbean visitors, whatever. And locals too, right? So the supermarket argument that people are making, if they understand why the supermarkets are the way they are, they wouldn't make some of the comments they're making. Yeah, because people may still be going there because people have to eat, but the choices they're making are different. And if you're still seeing, as I said, 25 or 26 different variety of biscuits, watch them and see how long they've been there. See if they're moving.
Yeah.
And see what moving. If you see Eclipse biscuit being repacked, it means people buying Eclipse biscuits. If you see nobody using Butterfinger something or the other that's still there since last week, still stack up nicely, nobody ain't buying that. So a $35 bottle of honey, trust me, that ain't going nowhere.
Dennis, have yourself a good day.
You too, my friend. If you could laugh at this, it's not a laughing matter. I don't know why Michelle is chuckling, because I know she knows what I'm talking about, because she's a mother and a wife. Brass tacks, good morning.
Pleasant day to you, Mr. Johnson.
To you too, sir.
There are some events that came up over the last 45 minutes that I had to converse on.
Mm-hmm.
Which I will still do. It's to do with Bridgetown. But before I do that, I want to tell you that Dame Elsie Payne, she was married.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you
and her husband was called? Mr. Payne? Or he wasn't around when she got the dame?
No, but
I remember her well. She used to call the program 1.2.
Yeah, dear Melcy Payne.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's from the Payne family who owned the Pilgrim Stores. All right, but let me come in here, Mr. Dawson. I've been listening, and there's some areas of concern. I hope the Minister of Maritime Affairs is listening, and I also hope that the Minister of Home Affairs are listening from the point of view that these are things that down the road, we liable to run right into it, but we did not stop them when it was happening. Take, for example, at the top of Lake Folly, Drava Lodge, there is a great electric grid that has been built there under the last government for a long time. I don't think it is in use as yet. It was alleged that it was built for the purpose of the new buses. But somewhere along the line, we would still want to know what is the reason that it has not been used as yet, and it's nearly over a year and a half. That's what they were the traffic lights at the top of just outside of Redmond's Road and Lake Folly. You're familiar with that?
Yes, sir. I know that, but that hasn't been finished that long.
Yeah, they were building the waterworks are responsible.
Yes, sir, but that has not been finished that long. So I pass Fontebelle. I won't say regularly, but once or twice. And I recall earlier this year, a couple months ago, as a matter of fact, I saw workmen in there with rollers and stuff organizing the roadway, the ground, the paved area. That wasn't last year. That was this year. That was recently.
Last year.
The superstructure. So hold on a second, though. On a serious note, those electrical installations have to be inspected. They have to be approved. They have to be put on the grid. So I don't know how long it takes for that to happen. Perhaps those who have done it before. I noticed there's a farm going up in St. Thomas as well. I think Mr. Williams is behind that. So I don't know how long it takes to have them operational. But I recall this year, sir, not last year, that the area was still being paved.
I'm not going to debate this with you, but I'm just going to tell you because of observation.
Mm-hmm.
The property, which was boosted, the Hess property, Java Lodge, Keir Shepherd was on that spot at
Correct.
One time.
Yeah.
And eventually, Keir Shepherd moved off. Eventually, they start making preparation for this Greek. Then eventually, they turn around and they cut the whole area. The fencing and they put this electric kind of fencing
I ain't not denying that, you know. I just telling you that the paved area below all the superstructure, the upright posts, etc., this year I saw workmen still working on the ground area. I'm not telling you that the upper part and the fencing and all that thing wasn't done since last year. It was. But I don't know if the grid is in effect yet.
Probably get an opinion on that, but I think it's since last year. Now, also, this idea of building in the Bridgetown port of fast service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you really start to study it, obviously, as you said just now, because of upgrades, because of marine situations, there may be a need for it for that particular position.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to know what government is doing with a property at the top of Reef Road, which was the home of the former Minister of Trade. That property there is suitable for, I would probably say, renovating and turn it into the home of the fire service. Because when you look across the road is where the CID has moved into the Board of Tourism building that was there on the right-hand side. So you've got a situation where there is a major property at the top of Reef Road that has been closed now, which was the home of the Minister of Trade, which was closed for a long, long time. Very, very long time. And here it is that is land idle. Nobody seems to remember that. And that could become a congestive area for probably the rebuilding of fire service in that area. That's one point I'm concerned with. The other point I'm concerned with is that they've just built the Martin building on the road there. Beautiful building, ready to be occupied. But somewhere along the line, as far as the port is concerned, they were saying that they're short of funds. But now they're telling you that they're going to build a walkway from the port right up to mix the other walkway at the bottom of the wharf. So this would mean that taxi drivers themselves will now have to start reconsidering that those people who normally would have walked to Bridgetown, then that walking the boardwalk and formally getting to Bridgetown.
Mm-hmm.
And it also means that the people who have business there are Pelican Village, because it's on the other side of the road. It will be a difficult situation for people of Pelican Village life business to continue the way that we would expect it to continue, because they move the pedestrian traffic across the road, and the pedestrian traffic which once used to be monitored by the taxi drivers. Now we have a funny situation where the taxi drivers now have to lose a little bit of business based on that walkway that is likely to be built. So these are questions that should be asked. What is going to happen? as far as the taxi owners are concerned, with that walkway that they're building from the outside of the port gate to Bridgetown. What is the true position as far as the building that I just spoke about, which is soft stone? Is one of the major buildings that was built back in the 70s.
So let me say this to you, soft stone buildings in Barbados, while they are attractive, have been brought into question because of lack of maintenance, fungus building up. When they've been repaired, they've not been repaired to a standard that makes them conducive to work. We've had that problem with the old Spirit Bond that leaked, and it was a nice place. When I saw it finished, we did shows from in there. We did outside broadcasts from in there. There were businesses there. People complained there was no place to park.
That was brick.
Yeah, I know it was brick, but it was resting on water.
Oh.
Right? And the soft stone also soaks up water. So you get another problem. But here's what I was going to say to you, though. What I think we need to do when we hear about these developments, rather than ask what the challenge is, what will happen to people there, to see the opportunities. For example, if the port, through whatever means, whether the sale of shares in Barbados Port Inc., whether they team up with some foreign entity that will develop the port to give them more berth space to separate container cargo from cruise business, because you have cruise lines that buy whole islands in the Bahamas. So if one of these cruise lines are using Barbados as their hub, as their home port, if they want to help develop the port and you could get funds at reasonable rates and people buy shares and you upgrade the port, then you could pay for a fire station that taxes won't have to be found to pay for it, I suppose, yet. Notice I put in yet in inverted commas. If the boardwalk leads to the heliport, where we used to have the helicopter base out there, and you have out there with a vendor's market, taxis out there, places to eat, tours could be taken from there, then you have a hub where people could be used to make money walking from the port rather than taxi drivers driving in and out of Bridgetown. The taxis will pick them up from there and take them to other places across Barbados and bring them back there. I keep going back to fish markets because there's a fish market in the U.S. that people go to see, tourists go there to watch people throw fish at one another and try to get people to catch fish. Now, I don't know people who would go on a tour to catch fish, but it is one of the, it's internationally known. We have fish markets in Barbados, all over Barbados. And we don't like the scent of fish. We don't like the scent of seaweed. We don't like all kinds of scents. But there are people who enjoy it. Richard Hoad, low down, said that a German woman came up by him and smelt the cattle dung and go, "Oh, the scent of the country." And people say it smelled bad. I don't know if it's true or not, Richard Hoad said.
For the sake of a debate.
No, but hold on. Don't go yet. I want to say this to you. What is wrong with designing our fish markets in such a way? We now have a Ministry of the Blue Economy. What's wrong with designing our fish markets in such a way that you have vendors in Barbados cleaning fish downstairs, boning flying fish, and you have upstairs with a glass floor, tempered glass floor, the people sit up there enjoying everything from fish wine to fried fish to steamed fish to cuckoo to everything but fish while looking at the fish being prepared downstairs and challenging people the same way during the Oysters Festival. We have boning competitions, have people boning fish. Rather than saying fish markets smell of fish and they don't have ice and they ain't have water and men interfering with young boys in fishing boats that pull up. Why we can't do that, sir?
No. If you go back to where I started.
We've been fishing since Columbus. Sorry.
No. I said that later down the road. Now, you just proposed some ideas that most likely could have gone forward back to the recondition of the fish market. So I'm saying later down the road, there's a possibility the very things that you are saying now would have to be implemented. Because the situation merits the fact that, okay, you did not see it then, but it was available to be done. So my position on this is that if we take these vast chances for changes and we don't understand, take for example, I see the port with a fire service in it, with a big power plant, big water plant, that in case there's anything that they can connect and see water can be pumped all across the island as far as that is concerned attached. So we have a situation that we cannot just plan for today. You got to plan when we look down the road, we can see where look the same glass chamber that you have been talking about that would keep up the state and see people working. The same glass chamber could have been implemented back then. Now, I go back to the Ministry of Trade Building. Mr. Johnson, I want you to go and look at that. The Ministry of Trade Building is one of the strongest buildings on the western end of Bridgetown.
Maybe they will turn it into a Siemens Hotel. I don't know. But, yeah. So I know the building. That entire area surrounding the port and going to the shallow draft is ripe for development. Will it happen? How it will happen? I don't know. Maybe not in my lifetime. Maybe when we build the islands off of Barbados, somebody will build the flyover from there. I don't know. This is Down to Brass Tacks.